And good evening. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Jeff Bryant. Keith is with me as always. Now, Keith, before we get the show started, I wanted to offer some perspective on where we're at with the show. And, you know, you and I were hanging out before the show, and I didn't want to talk about it before because I wanted it to be fresh and live on the air.
Okay.
But I just wanted to express, I think there's some good news that's happened for us this week. I think something has happened in the news cycle that bodes well for us. Last week, we talked sports and we talked politics, which we don't usually do. And, of course, a lot of people are talking about this whole Trump situation. Now, one of the things that's been in the news cycle this week is it sounds like he contends that the election is being rigged. Mm-hmm. And when he's asked to substantiate that, or when his surrogates, like Mike Pence, his running mate, are asked to defend that, they focus on the media. And they talk about how essentially this supposed vast conspiracy to undermine his campaign is the mainstream media. It's the fault of the mainstream media. Now, here at CITR, of course, this is alternative campus college radio, and our show falls, you know, under that umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
But it got me thinking, if we were criticizing Trump last week, and it's obvious to you and I that he's a total clown,
mm-hmm.
and in effect, our words are part of that narrative of the mainstream media. In effect, that means our show has gone mainstream. Do you follow my logic?
So because we talked about a thing that mainstream media has talked about, we're mainstream?
Essentially, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there is a conspiracy, I think we're part of it.
We're part of it.
And
yeah.
When I realized that, at first I was concerned because the word conspiracy sounds frightening. It sounds like something you don't want to be a part of. But the net result, I think, is there's more people that listen to this show than you and I know.
Really?
I think that's what it means.
Because we're mainstream?
Because we're mainstream. Doesn't that mean like if you're in the mainstream, we feel like we were swimming upstream, now we're floating downstream.
Dead? We're floating dead.
I think, you know, that's one of my concerns. Again, we've talked in the past, you and I, Keith, should we do a podcast or should we do a radio show? And I said to you, Keith, let's do both. Because if we're on the radio, there's just a different opportunity to tap in to the conversation that's happening in the media. And I think when people think of college radio, they think of it being, you know, subjugated to the fringe, the mm-hmm. fringe elements of society.
An alternative to radio.
I think that we have timed this just right. Again, we haven't really discussed the Trump candidacy since we started the show back in June, and certainly it's been in the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. Now, this accusation has been leveled since we did our show last week.
Okay.
I think the implication is, yeah, I think we've got quite a few listeners.
Really?
Yeah.
What? Is there something behind this? Is something specific behind this theory?
Everything I just said.
Okay.
That's all you need.
That's it?
Isn't it?
It wasn't because one.
I was hoping that you'd be
more
I know that sometimes Keith and I wonder whether a lot of people are listening to the show.
Yeah.
I'm being honest right now. I think we wonder that at times. It never gets us down.
Mm-hmm.
But like anybody, if you're going to put on a presentation of some kind, like it's nice to have an audience. And anyway, it occurred to me today that we are officially part of the mainstream following this logic.
Mm-hmm.
And that must mean that lots of people are listening.
Well, I suppose we each in our own way have had followers, people who have listened to or read things that we've done.
I don't know if I've ever been in the mainstream.
And so I think there's definitely people who could be listening to our show who might be interested before we became mainstream.
Yeah.
But do you think that because we talked about Trump, I mean, there's something to be said for this. I don't know if you're joking or not yet, but there's something to be said for when I get asked a question on my blog, askkeithanything.blogspot.com, a blog where I'm asked questions by other people,
mm-hmm.
and I have to answer them. When I get asked a question about a Kardashian
mm-hmm.
or a Bieber or a Trump, my numbers go up. Right. So in that regard, if we talk about Trump on air, in theory, other people, there are more people would listen.
This could be a fork in the road for Now We're Talking. Again, just to give you the overview, because who knows, maybe you're a casual listener who's just joined the broadcast today. But we've been hosting the show since June. And I would say this is a fork in the road for us. Does this mean maybe this means we kind of go the Billy Bush route and we start thinking more about the Kardashians and the Beavers and more superficial.
Is that the Billy Bush route? Oh,
there's quite a few different. That's a different fork in the road.
Also, if you didn't know who Billy Bush was, who I didn't until recently, the Billy Bush route wouldn't sound like something that we should ever do or go down in any capacity.
You mean like if you're literally driving somewhere? Yeah. And you're literally at a fork in the road.
Yeah, you don't go down the Billy Bush route.
The paved highway.
Yeah.
Or the Billy Bush route.
It's like main road.
Yeah.
Road less traveled.
Although the Billy Bush route sounds more adventurous for better or for worse.
Yeah, maybe in like an intimacy with a goat sort of way, but not like in a way that I would like to pursue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It is a fork in the road. To answer your question, Keith, whether I was joking or not, I was joking. I don't think the fact that we, our opinion of Trump, which is...
I don't buy it.
You don't buy what I'm saying?
I don't buy
that
you're joking now.
Well, maybe I'm joking now, but I wasn't before.
Oh.
Folks, that's right. Even, I even like to keep... I know that I keep you on your toes as a listener. Even Keith is kept on his toes here on the show.
Yeah. I don't like the idea that somehow we would gain more viewers. That's not the right word. Listenerets.
I like the idea that we'd gain more viewers.
Listeners. Yeah. I don't think that people would want to listen to us more just because we talk about Trump. In fact, I've resisted Trump on the blog. I've had to succumb to some degree because I keep getting so many questions about him. But I've constantly said I don't want to talk about him on the blog. And as we were saying last week, we kind of came to a bit of a tipping point where it's just gotten so ridiculous. And all the things he's done have built up into this like wonderful poo cake of idiotic behavior. And I feel like it was time to take a slice. And I've also been talking about it more on the blog, too. So, yeah, in general, any people who listen to me or read me are aware that I have resisted, and now I'm open to giving that jerk a piece of my mind. So, yeah, maybe we are getting a little bit more play.
So if I'm understanding what you're saying, there is a conspiracy against Donald Trump.
Yeah.
We are a part of it.
Yep.
We are now a part of the mainstream.
Yeah.
And our listenership / viewership... Potentially. Because, by the way, if you don't know, we broadcast here from UBC in Vancouver. And, you know, there's large windows.
Yeah, there's a really big window.
You know, you kind of, it seemed like when you said viewership, you felt like you were catching yourself in a mistake. Mm-hmm. It was a misnomer. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, you never know who's watching.
Yeah. Well, I'm often watching other people, if that counts, while we're here, because it is a big window.
There you go.
We should hang up some clothes in it or something, and then people will think it's a store, and then they'll come in, and then we'll make them be on the radio with us.
That's a heck of an idea. What would we sell, though? Ideas.
Clothes, I guess, if that's what we put in the window.
Really? I was thinking we would just use that to bait them.
Yeah, I guess that if...
The problem with putting up clothes secretly... is that it would actually obscure the view of the studio.
Yeah, but I really like clothes.
Okay, so that's where we're at so far with the show, folks. I just wanted to make sure off the top that I put it out there that I had this revelation, and based on Keith's reaction, of course, there's no way for me to sense your response to this out there in listener land. So, but based on Keith's response, it's probably not accurate. It's wrong. You're not feeling it, right?
I don't know, man. It's not like we prepared a lot. It's not like we sat down and said, here are the 9 things we can say about Trump that will, you know, get people listening or get people enraged. I mean, we kind of just spewed some vitriol because we're tired of his crap.
Folks, if you're just joining us, we are relegated to the fringes of society here on campus radio. And if you're listening, thank you so much for doing so. Why don't you prove that you're listening by calling 604-822-2487. Do you have opinions about what happened this week in the news cycle with Trump? Do you just have opinions generally? Give us a call and we'll discuss.
And there must be someone out there who has an opinion. And if you call, then it will prove to everyone that we increased our viewership.
All you need to do is be a person, listen to the radio right now, with a phone, with the acumen to use the phone, calling 604-822-2487. We're going to put your ass on the air.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you have acumen?
Yeah. Do you have acumen? Come to our little shop here
where
we sell random bits of clothes and acumen powder.
Oh, my God. It sounds like the name of one of those products where all the side effects are. You know, ever notice this about those products, those commercials? I know comedians have done this bit a million times, but what strikes me as funny about those commercials where there's a million side effects is not just that the side effects are plentiful or that they can be as bad as death. Mm-hmm. It's that some of the side effects are the same as the problem that they're having. So you'll have a stomach problem and you'll have to take a drug for it. But some of the problems with the drug are like increased diarrhea and bloating and all these things where you're like, well, that's why am I taking a drug that might help me in this regard, but may also hurt me in exactly the same way that this hurts me. It's a really big...
It cancels out your efforts.
It's a really big red alert in the face of the pharmacological industry that the drugs are so poor and they're trying to make so much money off of us that they're just giving us things that make us as sick as we were before we started.
Boom. Boom.
Really?
You did it.
Did I?
Well, you know, last week was...
Now our viewership is up.
Now.
I keep calling it viewership.
Now your viewership... folks, last week we didn't get the chance to acknowledge the fact that it's Thanksgiving here in Canada, or so it was last week. And Keith, I know that you penned. I always use this verb to pen.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stick with it. You digitally penned.
Yeah.
Penned an essay about Thanksgiving, and I wonder whether you're prepared to share that with us now.
Sure.
Do you want to?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
When you said penned, I thought of a pig, because you didn't say digitally penned at first.
Digitally penned.
Yeah, so now, because there's only digital penning, then just penning doesn't make me think of a pen and paper. It made me think either...
Caged.
Okay, yeah, it made me think either...
Keith Kennedy has been digitally penned in this studio for 7 days. We told him he couldn't leave the studio until he wrote the perfect essay about Canadian Thanksgiving.
Does he have the acumen?
So here now, folks, with all the acumen he could dredge up in a studio quasi-retail outlet where we sell acumen powder, is Keith Kennedy to deliver his essay on Canadian Thanksgiving. It's not racist, Thanksgiving is a concept. Or is it? Is that the theme of your essay?
Well, I guess it could be.
I just realized if that is the theme, that's a great setup.
Yeah.
If it has nothing to do with the fact that it's possibly racist.
I think I hit on some of those things. It's almost like I wrote an essay based on what the preface could be if I didn't tell you what was in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I often do.
Yeah.
Should I read it?
Go for it. Yep.
All right.
Keith Kennedy.
I thought I'd do an essay about Thanksgiving. Then I realized I don't care much about Thanksgiving. I don't even think of it as a holiday at all. My family has never made a big deal out of it, and we usually save our turkey for Christmas, a holiday I do care an awful lot about. We don't get up to the typical shenanigans as depicted by our betters on television. My father doesn't shame me about my life choices. My little brother doesn't throw a hissy fit because of some imagined slight. No one is hiding anything or holding anything back that will erupt into a fit of name-calling, creative swearing, or a possible scoop of mashed potatoes upside the head. Why is it that my family doesn't care about Thanksgiving? My mother was assaulted by a turkey when she was younger, but that couldn't possibly be relevant. If it was, you'd think she'd use any excuse to murder one of those little bastards. I don't have a fat sibling sensitive to the idea of gobbling, or a gross-necked grandparent sensitive to gross necks, or a vegan sensitive to all things yummy. My father worked in Aboriginal affairs as a negotiator for the government, and that made us, by some definition, a tad closer, as white folks go, to the struggles of our native population. But I don't recall us being very political about it at any point, and there was no evidence that we avoided the hypocrisy of Thanksgiving due to any slight against Indigenous peoples. So what the hell was our problem? I wrote a story when I was very young. I couldn't have been more than 6 or 7. It was a dark tale from the point of view of a turkey who wakes one morning... A bad writing cliche to start a story with someone waking, but what did I know at the time other than Hot Wheels and skinned knees, so back off. To discover that Thanksgiving is mere days away, he does some genuflecting, gets his house in order, and walks out, back straight, to stoically face his doom. The story ends with him being shot in the face. Is it possible that the secret is hidden somewhere within the demented fantasy of a handsome, flaxen-haired little boy, a child doomed to grow up to be a writer because of his idiotic imaginings and penchant for bucking societal norms? Is it possible that somewhere, deep inside my family, maybe even deep inside all of us, we sense that a holiday like Thanksgiving is ripe for parody, for satire, and possibly for the ultimate expulsion from our yearly celebrations? Make no doubt about it, my religious counterparts, this, like Halloween and Christmas, has become a secular holiday for most. The rituals of the past, both historically and religiously based, are as dead as the turkey in my childhood story, long since shot in the face. Some even call Thanksgiving Turkey Day, which may shine the brightest light of all on how we slowly shave away all things unwanted until the core reason exists alone, like glistening meat sheared away from a ragged carcass. We want to celebrate. We want to gorge ourselves and laugh with family and friends. We want gravy. Who doesn't want gravy? So we dress it up any way you like, take the hand of whatever tradition best keeps us heading toward the true north of what we really want, an excuse. An acceptable reason to eat too much, drink too much, and make with the merry. And is there anything wrong with that? No. Sure, we may be misguided in tying these celebrations into traditions that did mean something once, but there's nothing wrong with needing a moment to breathe and appreciate the life you have. One could claim that we should need no reason, that tying these things together, these old heinous religious entities, with our desire to party is a lazy act, that we should know well enough to celebrate whenever we feel it's necessary. In theory, this is valid. In practice, few do find the time. Most bury their heads deep to the neck, surviving their daily lives. Because of this, holidays in our modern world become more than their origins, more than what they're tied to culturally or religiously. They become signposts, beacons in the night, a scheduled, predetermined moment to reach for when you know that you can bring your head up, smell the fresh air, and pour gravy all over your face with the people you love. So why didn't my family celebrate Thanksgiving? The truth, perhaps, is that we didn't have much to celebrate. We moved away from our extended family when I was 13 across the entire breadth of this country. Our traditions, both familial and religious, were left behind. The four of us were the entirety of our family unit. Thanksgiving didn't see the sudden arrival of grandparents or uncles or sisters and brothers. It was, as opposed to a beacon, a spotlight shining down on our isolation from the world we'd known. It makes sense that we wouldn't celebrate this. And yet, in this journey, there was a parallel, something to be learned from the people who first traveled to this land, heading west to discover the New World. Their journey was tough, and it didn't end in the great celebration that we've been taught to envision. It ended in death and heartache and the trouncing of an indigenous species. So when you think about it, my family got off light in terms of the results of our pioneering nature. And we did have each other, just perhaps in a less celebratory fashion. Until the divorce, that is. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
That's right, folks. Another explosive essay from Keith Kennedy. And it sounds like you did touch on the race thing a little bit there at the end.
Yeah, a little bit. It was a little meandering in my thought process to talk about Thanksgiving. That's sometimes the fun of writing, is you sit down with an idea and you see where it takes you. And I think that's what, maybe that's the definition of an essay. I don't remember the exact definition of an essay, but you sort of try to find some purpose within the ramblings. Maybe that's not an essay. Maybe that's all writing or all creation is, I think it's Nabokov who wrote Lolita, who had this theory that that's what novel writing was making a huge mess. And about halfway through that mess, realizing that you've made a huge mess and trying to unmake it and put it all together again to get to the end. And so it was fun. I don't have a lot of passionate feelings about Thanksgiving, which is sort of what the point of the essay became. And I wondered why that is. And I think I found some interesting things for myself.
For me, all of these holidays that we celebrate was always just about not having to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Because by no means was it the case that when we weren't in school for Christmas, that we would celebrate Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And for Thanksgiving, that we would celebrate the pilgrims.
The God of turkeys. Yeah.
Whatever it is. I don't even know.
Turkey quaddle.
I kind of find that as I look at what other families do for these things and what their traditions are for these holidays, I realize I never really...
Mm-hmm.
It just meant that I didn't have to go to school.
Yeah, totally, man.
And that we would eat.
Well, it's funny. I actually did a little research about Thanksgiving because I realized when I sat down to write this definitive Thanksgiving essay that I didn't know anything about it. Like, I remember, like, the silly stories we were told when we were kids, but I know as an adult that that's all nonsense. So,
I guess one thing I'm curious about is why do we celebrate Thanksgiving at a different time than the Americans? Although I see that they now have Columbus Day when we have Thanksgiving. I get very confused about this. So,
I don't know the actual answer.
Are we celebrating the same event that they did, which is white people coming here and basically persecuting natives?
Well, I think we are celebrating a different... I think... There is a Canadian Thanksgiving, like that some people believe is like the equivalent to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I grew up with American Thanksgiving, like not in terms of time, but like it was described to us in our youth, even though we celebrated at a different time than the Americans. It was very much described just like the American Thanksgiving. Like I learned about Plymouth.
We didn't land on Plymouth stuff. Rock.
No,
Plymouth Rock landed on us.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Apparently there was things like that happened in Canada, but we're told the American version of the story when we were young. So maybe that's changed in school now. I don't know, but
I don't know either.
Also, I'm from Newfoundland, so we didn't join Confederation until 1949. So maybe we're just like clinging to non-Canadian.
I'm asking the wrong guy because you've got this latency period.
Yeah, I do,
which is detrimental.
Yeah, so maybe out here you were taught Canadian Thanksgiving, but I wasn't. I just heard these, like, it's almost like a folk tale, or it's like you said, like Christ, it's like the Bible. It's like some story from the Bible where it's like, these people showed up and they traded things and there was a turkey and they ate it and there's a cornucopia and that's a thing. Like, I'm like, what the hell's that? So I looked it up and it was, all of this is just like any holiday, based and layered upon other old traditions and old religious beliefs. You know, things like harvest and the changing of the seasons and solstice. It's all that kind of crap. And I have no interest in it.
Is it celebrated in the old world? Are people thankful this time of year for eating turkey?
They got rid of the Americans.
And the Canadians and the Newfies.
We didn't want those people anyway.
I mean,
let
I guess,
them eat turkey.
I'm just offering my crude understanding of this, but I'm assuming this is a New World holiday.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting.
I assume so.
And that it's not celebrated in England, for example.
Yeah.
And it's hard to overlook the fact. It's interesting, you know, it's... I personally don't know a lot about Aboriginal issues. I don't really have a lot of opinions about it. But one of the main things that gets me thinking about this time of year, especially when the Blue Jays are playing the team in Cleveland, is what is the deal with sports teams having Native American teams? I'm curious about this because my sense of it is that it begins with high schools and maybe colleges moving on and changing their names.
Yeah.
But it stops, at least for the moment, with large-scale professional American teams like the Cleveland baseball team and the Chicago hockey team and the Washington football team.
Atlanta as well, right?
And Atlanta holding on to... I assume it just comes down to money. I don't believe that the people own these brands are inherently evil or have an axe to grind against the Native American population. But I assume it comes down to money, and they're basically just saying, how long can we not deal with this for?
Yeah.
But... I don't know, like the Cleveland Indians were named that over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
1914. So a lot's changed in the world since then. And I think it's fair from the outside looking in, just trying to look at this with some objectivity. I think it's objectively fair to say the perspective on Native Americans 102 years ago was pretty degrading.
Yeah.
So to perpetuate that quote-unquote tradition with a baseball team, it just seems unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, I think I don't know much about this stuff. I've heard people argue with this before, and I'm never interested in this in particular. But I just had a thought, which was maybe one of the reasons that they hang on to these traditions is because after Whitey came and slaughtered everyone, there was some pushback. And so maybe these people at some point, it was a positive thing in their minds. They thought that if we name our team this, we called them the Braves, or at the time Redskins as one, maybe they thought these were like terms of almost like honoring them. Like maybe they thought at the time, even though now we realize it's perpetuated some pretty negative stereotypes, and it didn't all of a sudden bring Aboriginal people back to the cusp of where they've been in any capacity. So we know they were wrong, but maybe there is a possibility that the reason they did it was because they thought they were honoring them in some fashion, and that might be just wishful thinking on my half.
Well, the funny thing is that might have been true of some and not true of others, but what's certain is to this day, that is the argument. To this day, the counter argument is, why don't you change the name of the team? Oh, we're celebrating. Saying that they're brave.
It sounds like a cop-out in a modern context, so now I feel bad for being part of that. I just think it's ridiculous. Like, there's a couple of them I try to deal with it individually because I haven't really looked into this in the details, but I find the Redskins in particular to be stupid. To me, that's like calling them the Black Faces. We know better than to call a team the Black Faces, so why don't we know better than to call them the Redskins?
I think for me what it comes down to, and again, I'm trying to step back from my bias on this issue, which is I think it's really stupid, and it should be stupid in as much as the names should just be changed and just move on. But I'm trying to somehow step back from that, I guess only marginally, by looking at and thinking, even if it didn't offend you, it's inevitable that we're moving beyond things like that.
Yeah.
So why not just do it? Just get on with it.
What I don't understand is
I think that's what it dredges up for me is it's bigger than this. It's like there's areas in which we can improve as people.
And these are obvious ones.
And these are really easy ones.
Yeah.
So why not just do it?
What I don't get is now that I've said that stupid thing, and it sounds like I'm part of the problem, not the solution.
No, you're trying to enter the minds of the people 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I think there is truth to what you're saying. I think there was a perspective that it was celebrating the caricature of Native Americans.
Whereas,
but that's patronizing.
It is, because they're not a caricature, they're caricature.
Yeah, they're actual people.
So I just don't understand why now it's not an opportunity. Like, you don't have to change the Atlanta Braves to the Atlanta scuba divers or the Atlanta Husky dogs.
Yeah.
You can change. What is a good word? Talk to Native people. What do they celebrate within their own culture? What is their version of being called the Pumas or the Ducks or the... Heat. I don't know.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible names like that.
Well, actually, I was reading an article about this, and there actually is, I don't know if it's AA or AAA, but it's a minor league baseball team in Spokane, Washington. Mm-hmm. And the way they've dealt with this situation is in consultation with, I guess, the area native band, tribe, what have you. They've changed the name of their team to whatever the native language is, like the lettering, not just the anglicized version of the word, but the actual lettering is in that native language.
Yeah.
So they're making an attempt to put their money where their mouth is and actually double down on the idea that they are in fact celebrating native culture. But I think ultimately just white people just don't bother to co-opt other cultures' mythology or whatever. Just use your own.
Yeah.
It's just not necessary.
Well,
if native individuals want to have sports teams and call them whatever's appropriate to them, like let them, they can do that.
Yeah.
But you don't, there's lots of things. Just call them, you know, Atlanta Go-Getters.
Yeah. Because that's what white people are. Go-Getters. Go get the blankets that are covered in
disease. I was thinking go get the World Series, but.
Go get all of the living native people and murder them.
Yeah.
The Go-Getters. See, you can't win.
No.
But let me risk, in the hope of being more mainstream and having a little potency, I'm going to risk something here. I think if you're a baseball team and you change your name to the actual language of the native people, and again, to be clear, I'm pretty familiar with this stuff. I grew up with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's overkill. I think it's missing the point, because what you're doing is you're saying we're willing to sacrifice our brand for something that people will not understand. And the idea that maybe that people will look into that or learn more about the culture, I don't know if that's really prominent. I think it's a better choice to maybe, like I suggested, find out what word means something to them. Put that word in English on your jersey. Then people will go, what's that? And that starts a dialogue about what it is. But if you do something that people can't brand, like we're used to these brands. If you do something that's anti-brand or strange to people, like you said, most people aren't even going to worry about it, or they're not going to like it, or they're not going to associate with it in a way that will propagate that, right? It's not, if you don't do something that keeps it flowing, if you don't do like keep the brand idea going, the idea that people are if they find it accessible, then it's not going to spread widely, right? It's going to become a singular issue, and it will not spread to other teams. Other people are not going to do that, is what I'm saying.
I think for me, it's just don't have an expectation that white people can co-opt successfully and tastefully appropriate their mythology or their history. Just move entirely beyond that assumption.
Yeah.
Move entirely beyond trying to make that. Just move. It's just, it feels like an 1800s thing. It doesn't even feel like a 1900s thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the 1900s wasn't that long ago. It feels like this is like really old timey.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah. Well, again, if you want to help people, if you want to help minority groups or people who are oppressed, you're doing a disservice by creating your own interpretation of what's going to help them, right? And that's what that sounds like to me. Like, if you want to actually help them, then help them. If not, I agree with you. If you're not going to help them, then just move on, do your own thing. But don't do your own thing whilst hurting them and pretend it's fine.
The interesting thing with the Cleveland Indians is that they've been kind of phasing out that brand. They won't admit it. I've read about this too, and they'll deny that it's the case. But over the course of the last several years, they've removed Chief Wahoo from their hats, and it's the letter C instead.
Yeah.
And around their stadium, they've removed the imagery. They haven't done it entirely. It's still on
their
uniform.
Their chest.
So by no means have they made that decision short of changing the name. It's being done in a very glacial way, which suggests to me they're like, they recognize it's inevitable, that it's a problem, but they're trying to do it in such a way as to not alienate their fans who are indifferent
to this. And hurt the merchandise sales. That's the big thing, right?
I guess for full disclosure, I should concede that the Cleveland team is currently beating the righteous team, the Toronto Blue Jays, 2-0 in the series, and that's probably fueled my opinions about this to a certain degree. But yeah, when I was watching those first two games, I'm just like, you Trump-loving racists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ohio's a swing state, Keith. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah. He messed up in Ohio pretty bad, though, I don't think. Oh, well, who
knows?
Are
we going to talk about this?
I don't know. Can I talk about something else first?
Yeah, let's talk about something else.
Well, it's related to what we're saying. It's something I wanted to hit on. We think we talked about maybe bringing it up on the air before, and now that I'm feeling a bit more potent today. Along the lines
it's all
of...
all about words with P for us today.
Yeah.
Lots of pops.
Yeah.
Pens and potents. Yeah.
I find that there's this common occurrence going on in society, and one of the examples is the new Luke Cage TV show that's mm-hmm. been on Netflix. Another mm-hmm. really good example, and maybe a better example, is the Ghostbusters movie that was happening.
Okay.
And what I find is that when a minority group is given credit for something, despite these movies take tons of different people, men, women, people of all colors are involved in all of these sorts of things, but the Ghostbusters movie is a good example, as I said, because it was a female cast, and it wasn't before, mm-hmm. and these are all prominent female comedians, it became the female version of it.
Yeah.
And so what happened was...
And to be fair, that is the angle of the film. It's totally. Not as if they're like, let's cast new Ghostbusters. Some of them are short, some of them are tall, some yeah. of them are male. Like, it's the female version, yeah. and so that is what
yeah,
it is.
It is a statement.
It's a choice.
Yeah, it's a statement. Because of that, there was some sexist backlash, mm-hmm. and the backlash to that backlash was people basically saying that if you don't want to see this movie, if you don't want to give it a chance... For whatever reason, the actual reason is that because you're sexist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't actually bother me all that much. It's ridiculous in its way, but it's kind of saying, like, for all those people who aren't sexist, we're just like, well, whatever. And for all those people who are, it kind of points a finger at them in a way that I like.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't like is when the movie comes out, then if you don't like the movie, you're sexist.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't think that does any good. Like I said, with something like the Luke Cage show, which everyone really loves, I don't like it. I think it's a much poorer quality show than the other Netflix Marvel fare. Mm-hmm. And I'm really in the minority on this. So that's why I think it's more fair to use the Ghostbusters as an example, because it seemed like more people really didn't think it was all that good a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not being too controversial, and you're missing the point. Like, this is not my hill to die on.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that if a minority group or someone who doesn't get a chance to do something does it, you do them a disservice by pretending it's great or getting angry at people who critique it. Because if you want more female-led films, what you really are saying is you want more good female-led films.
Mm-hmm. It gets difficult because, you know, whether you like a movie or not is going to be subjective. When I decide if I'm going to see movies, I definitely rely on, what do they call it, aggregators like Rotten Tomatoes?
Metacritic, yeah.
Metacritic, stuff like that. So I'm relying on that. But, I think that to justify, and I would agree with you based on my understanding, the Ghostbusters, I haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. My understanding is the new Ghostbusters movie is, it's okay.
Yeah.
Based on my faith in those aggregators. And I do have faith in that, but it gets more, there's layers of complication to this because whether a movie is good or not is actually subjective. I mean, you mm-hmm. can rank certain things. It gets more problematic. This is The Birth of a Nation is another example of this. It's almost the opposite example with Ghostbusters. We're saying if you happened to think the movie was not particularly good, you can get lumped in with a segment of society who are misogynists.
Yeah.
And there's a danger that, and with Birth of a Nation, if you decide I'm not going to go see that movie, you can be on the right side of things in terms of not being viewed as a misogynist, but then you could be racist because you're not supporting a slave film.
Yeah.
That's what's interesting about this Birth of a Nation thing is it's this intersection of two things that are a part of our evolution,
yeah, very
which is we're thinking about how, you know, sexual assaults, which is a good thing. We're thinking about, you know, we're reflecting more on the history of black culture in the U.S. Mm-hmm. These are good things, but it's confusing because they intersect with that film,
mm-hmm.
a film I haven't seen. I'd never heard of the guy who made it before. I really know very little about it, but on the one hand, it premiered at Sundance last year, is my understanding, right around the time that this Oscars so white controversy.
Yeah.
They'd announced the nominees. Then this film becomes the biggest, it sold for the most amount of money ever as an independent film at Sundance, and everybody gave it two standing ovations. This is hailed as the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
And then this whole story comes out about the history of the star and the director and the writer and his guy that he wrote it with. Of all places, Penn State, which mm-hmm. has a really sketchy history with some more abuse, sexual abuse stuff. And that movie is not doing very well now at the box office. And I think that could just be because there's a limited market segment already.
Yeah.
But it's probably influenced by this. Mm-hmm. My instinct is yeah, screw that guy. Like, if it's ambiguous about how he did that thing, and who's he to be like the voice of a generation with slave films? But it's just like, is that fair? I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting point. We didn't plan to bring this up this way, but I think that it's really interesting that you pointed to that film because it really does break the mold. Where the, in this landscape we have now in entertainment and in critique in general, everyone has their opinions. There's no more critics. Everyone is like this equal opinion, and we're just on a team that's the good team. And if you're not on the good team, you're in the wrong. And this is a very rare example after a series of blatant "be on this team or you're bad," where there's possible sexual assault, and those guys made a movie about slavery. And if for once in the last 5-10 years, you can't be on the wrong side or the right side, and maybe that will break the mold. Maybe that's a good thing that we talk about that and people understand just how bad it is, because I don't think people get it. I think people get so biased. They go like, this movie's women, I'm a woman, or this is strong, or I'm a man who loves women. And you go and you say, this is great, and that biases you to some degree, and so you enjoy it. And that's legitimate. It's legitimate to like it, even if it was because you got super pumped about it. That's not the same as critique. And the fact that we're sequestering each other based on our emotional reactions is troubling. And now this, as you're saying, this Birth of a Nation movie is something that is a lot of emotion on both sides of that coin. So maybe people have to put that emotion aside and be critical, properly critical. We'll see, because I don't know if that movie didn't do well financially. Maybe it's a great film. Will people, then there's another topic, of course, will people be able to look at the movie critically as a movie about slavery with the guys? You know, will people look critically at their record? Will they say, well, they weren't convicted?
And this is the same territory with Woody Allen and Polanski and all these other filmmakers.
Yeah, historically, we've been okay with it. Or maybe we're not anymore.
You have. But.
No, I mean, as a society, we don't imprison those people or kick them out of the room. We let them keep making films.
Right.
We still, in that regard, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so maybe that's something that shouldn't be happening. Maybe this is a good example of that, too. I mean, maybe this is how we do it now. Maybe when someone does something like that, Polanski didn't get in trouble. Maybe this new guy, maybe he does. Maybe that's the way it is now.
It
maybe
gets
we're
complicated.
So
it's like, okay, he made a slave film, so that's a good thing. But maybe he sexually assaulted a woman, that's a bad thing. But apparently he is okay with the idea that transsexuals can use whatever bathroom they want, so that's a good thing.
So we're just playing pros.
You know, it's like hard to keep. It's almost like you need to keep score.
Yeah.
Of what he's doing that's advancing a progressive agenda, and what he's doing to undermine it, to decide like what the final analysis.
I guess
like,
that's sort of my point. Is what I'd like to get back to is a critical analysis of the film itself, and I don't mean critical like everyone has to be an expert.
Donald Trump made an incredible film about slavery?
You're kind of setting me up here, because my answer is really simple. I'm really like black and white on this. I don't associate.
I'm not setting you up. I mean, whatever.
I don't associate the artist with the art.
Mm-hmm. But what if Donald Trump made an incredible propaganda film espousing the superiority of the white race, but on its own merits, it was really well made?
That's very different.
Would you find it difficult?
That's completely different.
How so?
Well, if he made a great movie that was aligned with my sensibilities in terms of, like I said, if he made a progressive movie that made
people aligned with your beliefs,
of course, then I'm going to accept that as a piece of art and I'm going to judge it. If he then made something that I thought was detrimental to society, then I would dislike the thing.
Okay.
I would also probably wonder about the man's motivation himself. But there's examples out there of people like Orson Scott Card is a good example, who's an author who wrote Ender's Game is the most famous thing that he wrote, which was made into a movie a few years back. And some people like protested outside the film because Orson Scott Card doesn't believe in gay marriage. And like I said, some people are really, they believe that. If you think a thing as a person, then your art is all is tainted with that. And I just don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that art goes, it's not yours anymore once it leaves your pen. Now, don't get me wrong. If you are against gay marriage and you write a book that's fictional, but it's about not liking gay marriage, then it gets confusing because it's like maybe you're trying to put your personal agenda. But if you write a fantasy book or science fiction, but it has nothing to do with what you think about, you know, anything, any important topic, like it has nothing to do with abortion.
Doesn't contain those themes within the work.
Then the minute that it leaves your pen, it's up for me to interpret how I want. And if I like it as a piece of art, then it's okay. That doesn't mean that I endorse the human.
Yeah,
but I can endorse. I can love the art. I can have the art and love it. Maybe I won't give him too much of my money, but I can still appreciate the art itself. Yeah, maybe if someone had liked Hitler's art,
Well, he was a painter. Apparently, he was a hell of a painter. Yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one. I look at like Cosby. I look at this Billy Bush guy. even with this Nate Parker guy, like I look at these people.
He's the filmmaker for the
Birth of a Nation.
Right.
You know, I look at these people and I'm gleeful at watching them get destroyed. I hope for them to get as destroyed as possible. I don't know what happened in any, of course, these are different situations and, you know, what they did or what they allegedly did. It falls at different spots on the spectrum. But there is a part of me that it's almost like I'm looking for those. I want these people to become pariahs and to be like chased out of town with pitchforks, mm-hmm. because I believe, perhaps simplistically, that by making it unambiguous and chasing them out of town, then we can shore up our borders better and ensure that evolutionarily speaking, on balance. But you see, the irony is once I start thinking this way, then I start sounding like Hitler. Because then I start to get into some sort of quasi-eugenic situation where I'm like, sterilize them. Let them not breed.
If we get rid of all the bad people.
But anyway, I'm saying that for me, like my perspective, you know, Woody Allen is an interesting example because if you look at Cosby, this thing that's happening with Gian Gomeschi and now with Cosby, and it's like the Gomeschi effect.
And now with Trump.
Now with Trump, of course, and also Roger Ailes, who's the Fox guy. Yeah. It's now a thing that's happening, which I don't know to what extent it happened previously, which is that I think people are frustrated that there's behavior that is intolerable to people that may or may not be illegal or proven to be illegal. And so, you know, short of that person being convicted of a crime and going to jail, they want them to at least be ostracized,
yeah.
or seen tarred and feathered and seen for what they are. And you look at somebody like Bill Cosby, and it's how all these accusers stacked up. And the same thing happened with Gian Gomeschi. And then you look at Woody Allen, and I'm not an expert on any of these cases, so I don't. But my understanding is with Woody Allen, it wasn't the same scenario where there's countless examples of people making these accusations. It's limited to a specific scenario.
Yeah.
And then, of course, but then there's Roman Polanski, who maybe there was a single scenario, but he admitted to a certain degree. He was convicted of a crime.
He did that thing, yeah.
I enjoyed the movie The Pianist. That's mm-hmm. Roman Polanski. You know, I
like a lot of Roman Polanski.
There's something about Woody Allen that I find appealing, and yet, despite the fact that there's not the pile-on effect with him, and that I don't have a knowledge of whether he's acted inappropriately or not, I do, when I think about some of his films and like the young girls that play his mm-hmm. love interests, it's not actually impossible, kind of like with Michael Jackson as well, it's not impossible for me to see how that could be so.
Yeah.
Those are the ones for me, actually, when I think about being on the fence, would be Woody Allen and Michael Jackson, for example. Mm-hmm. I think for me, if those allegations were substantiated, I think it would. I don't think I would be compelled to dance to Billie Jean anymore. I think it would affect me. I think it would. But then again,
yeah,
then again, is it like if I look at Michael Jackson and I have a sense that maybe he was a pedophile, but I'm still not that I don't. I'm giving the impression I spent a lot of time dancing to Billie Jean, and I haven't done that recently.
Oh,
but
I have.
But I've enjoyed his music and. Is it some sort of cognitive dissonance in my mind where I'm pretending it's not likely? I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. I'm trying
to engage with this idea that if there's somebody who seems to have behaved in a way that's offensive to me, that I set that aside and enjoy their mm-hmm. art. I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I'm actually glad that you just spoke of it the way you did, because I'm so, as I said before, I'm so definitive on this topic. It's just, but it's not the kind of topic where I don't think there's a wide range of acceptable opinions. Just because I think one way doesn't mean I think the other way. I find that there's an excessive amount of force used on the opposite side of this particular. People really want to be like, how dare you like that? That guy did these horrible things. I don't like that. Again, it's just not accepting other people's opinions on how they think. It's kind of militant. It's kind of angry. I think that it's perfectly acceptable for you to have disdain or distaste and have that spread into something else. That can happen even in unrelated things. You can hear about a story and have been eating a food at that time, and the story disgusts you, and now the food makes you think of it. Like, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with being a human being and relating one thing to another. Obviously, someone's art is related to who they are, right? But my simple explanation for the way the people that think the way I do is that I looked at a painting by Picasso when I was younger. I didn't know who Picasso was, and I liked it. And I've chosen to not dislike that based on things I may or may not have heard about Picasso. I'm not giving Picasso crap here, but right, that's a choice I made to say,
the
like,
Picasso lovers are letting up the phone,
like,
Keith.
If I like a thing because it's art and it was mine and I didn't know anything about the artist, like direct, I don't care about the director of a movie necessarily. I'm not a fan to the point where I'm going to go get an autograph from that guy. It's just not the way I think. Therefore, it's easy for me to separate. So if I say I like this, it's easy to separate. If it's not easy for you to separate, that's completely within your right. It's just not completely within your
but
right
don't
to tell
be militant
me
towards
to,
Keith about it.
To tell me that I'm
but
wrong.
But let's get
I'm
specific.
Not
let's
you that
think
you're
about
wrong.
I mean, it's one thing to have that opinion in an abstract fashion, but are there specific examples where you've been put in the situation and it's informed your opinion here?
Has
there been a specific artist that's has behaved in the way that you find morally unacceptable or it rubs you the wrong way?
Mm-hmm.
So a pedophile would be great for this analogy,
mm-hmm.
But that didn't influence your experience of the art.
Mm-hmm. Are
there specific examples of that for you?
Well, this is what I'm saying by me being so far on this one side of this is there isn't. There isn't an example where I found out a thing. Like, I think the most recent
one
was...
So you haven't been tested? Your theory hasn't been tested
well,
yet?
Well, I mean, I remember hearing about Marion Zimmer Bradley, who's an author, and then I found out that she had some bad things in her past, and I'm not here to spread all these things, but it turns out there was some, like you said, pedophilia type stuff and some inappropriate things when she was younger and with younger people. And I just thought, well, I don't know her anyway. That's the way my brain works. Like, I don't know
her. Were
you
offended by the behavior?
I'm not a fan. Yes, of course. But I'm not a fan of her as a person, right? I'm not a fan of her. I don't like her because of the way she lived her life around those people or what she chose. I don't know where she went to school. I don't know what her philosophies are. Now, if you're the kind of person who knows everything, if you're like a huge Woody Allen fan, you know everything about him and you love him as a person, and then you find that out, as the last thing you find out about Woody Allen was what happened with him and his daughter, then I almost would expect you to have that crumble your world to some degree. I'm just not the kind of personality who gets in that in-depth into the person. I don't care about the person that much. And because of that, it's easier for me to separate the art. Mm-hmm. And I think of it as a good thing because it allows me to enjoy more art and be positive. But I'm also not the kind of person who's out there going, watch his movies despite what he did. Watch his movies despite what he did. I don't care. I don't care about that. And I don't even know if that's appropriate.
It's a hell of a thing to yell in public as well. It rolls off the tongue.
Yes. I've worked on it for years.
It would fit on a sign,
yeah.
I think, if the sign was large enough.
Yeah, I can make a large
but
sign.
But I don't.
Yeah.
I think if you say it four times in a row, it's fine. What was it again?
I don't remember.
Well, exactly. So how good of a slogan can it be? I'm thinking if you said it 100 times, it wouldn't roll off the tongue too well. I don't know. I'm mixed feelings about it because I feel like I feel like people have the right to have their own opinion. Let's say that they, they just can't get enough of the Cosby Show or whatever, and if conventional wisdom suggests that he's a pretty
Oh, dude, Cosby's the one. You just hit it. Cosby's the most recent one. That's,
for you?
Yeah.
Well, tell me more.
Yeah.
So hold on, break it down.
I didn't want to interrupt you because I was going somewhere.
I'm sensing and pick up the ball once I. Yeah. I'm sensing what I'm going to get from you here is there have been enough women that have accused Cosby of really creepy, sexually predatory behavior. You don't like it.
Yeah, here's the thing.
It's affected how you feel about his work.
It only takes one, first of all, for me. If someone throws a stone at someone and it's the right kind of stone, mm-hmm. we all have our buttons, right?
Mm-hmm.
So violence against women, whether it be it sexual or otherwise, is a real button for me.
Mm-hmm.
And for most people, I think.
Yeah.
Most good, sensible
you would
humans.
Hope for most people, yeah.
You're like, that's horrendous.
Apparently not for Bill Cosby.
Yeah. So again, because my philosophy is like, oh, yeah, okay, I heard one of those. And I went, okay, yeah, sure. I'll accept right now on the spot that Bill Cosby is a piece of garbage.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to stop me from watching like the stuff he does.
Mm-hmm.
But it has. I realize now that that's the one because it was so much and it's such a big thing. Now, this idea, if I may briefly.
Please.
I am absolutely disgusted. And I'm not always all that disgusted by bad behavior, but I'm really, really disgusted by what has happened in terms of victims of guys like this.
Mm.
The fact that it's one thing to be victimized,
mm-hmm.
to have someone punch you in the face and have it hurt your face mm-hmm. is one thing. But to be so traumatized by it and by the system surrounding it, and I know people who have dealt with this sort of thing where they've gone to the police and it's gone poorly. The amount of people who accuse people of sexual assault and then it just gets lost in the system and no one has ever... that really, really upsets me.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
unjust.
It's so unjust. And that's where it comes
extremely
from.
Extremely unjust.
That I really have a big Captain America anger thing
right.
when it comes to injustice.
Right.
And also just the women again, it's like I have a mom who I love, and so as we all hopefully do, and because of that, when a woman gets hurt, I'm like, well, sure. that's not good.
Sure,
don't hurt my mom. Yeah. Right. And so it's really
imagine anybody you care about, whether it's a woman or not, being suffering, and it being unjust. And generally, it's just sort of like falls by the wayside and nothing's really done.
Yeah, again, like we said, I think
this starts to like tap into the idea of why somebody might hold up a sign saying, don't go to this Bill Cosby show, because their fear might be, it's if you do anything but oppose it, if it's ambiguous, whether it's, if you don't clearly articulate this is unacceptable behavior,
mm-hmm.
then it will persist as a problem in society, would be that perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a very,
generally you're not on board with that. But in this case, it's caused you to shift.
Well, maybe when you just said that, I was like, yeah, that's a really good point, that if there's a guy who's doing horrible crap or has done horrible crap, you wouldn't ever want to seem like you're supporting him. So it's easy for me to sit here and say, I have a philosophy as my personality goes, where I don't ever say I was supporting him in the first place. I don't endorse a person just because I endorse their art. Mm-hmm. And I don't even necessarily endorse their art just because I'm a fan of it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you picture these modern contexts and you realize how many women, like this idea that the Republicans are like, oh, these Trump accusers are just coming out now, what a conspiracy. It's no, that's what happens, is people are afraid to speak until someone else speaks.
Mm-hmm.
And then they realize, and they're facing that. They're going, oh my God, that happened to me. And all that emotion comes up. And they finally feel this beautiful, beautiful moment where they can tell the truth. Mm-hmm. And the idea that the Republicans or anybody would say, oh, you're lying because of the timing of it, is absolutely demented and disgusting and all the D words. And I think that now this idea that we would be perceived as endorsing the bad guy just because we like his art, that in the modern climate with modern offenders is a little different. I think you've hit on something here, that because of how we react now, and how much in the last couple of years we've realized the amount of sexual assault that's gone on, the way women have been historically forced to deal with this, I would not want to go see Bill Cosby just in case. And this is unlike me normally, but just in case someone would think that was an endorsement of his behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And you just hit on that, and I didn't know that was in me.
Now, hold on a second. You're saying I just hit on it. Are you saying you just realized this now, or that there was a period of time, or this occurred in the last year or two?
No, I think I'm just realizing it now. I've thought he was a piece of garbage.
Because I'm assuming
before.
You're not, I don't, when I think, like, what is it that you're missing if you're not, maybe you're not watching The Cosby Show, but I don't think of you as a Cosby Show watcher. So was there a moment when The Cosby Show came on and you changed the channel?
Well, it's funny
this
because
hasn't come up until we've talked about it now, theoretically.
Yeah, well, no, I don't watch The Cosby Show regularly anymore, and I watched his stand-up special from before this stuff came out, but then I found out that he'd been accused years ago, and I didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe there's a bit of backlash there, too. I don't want to confuse
the issue. But you haven't been in a scenario since all this came out where you wanted to watch a Bill Cosby thing and you said, I'm going to turn this off.
No,
now.
And I think the funny thing is, as soon as that came into my head, the answer is no. The answer is no. Not only would I not go out and wait in line to watch him, because that would be an endorsement, I have no desire to watch the work of that sick F word.
Right. So this is an example that allows you to tap into the frustration people might have with any given situation.
Which is cool, because
I think it depends on the situation.
It must, because for being someone who, for whatever reason, the five or six other examples of this, I've always come out on this side. Maybe time is the factor here. Maybe it's removing yourself from it. Like Orson Scott Card thinks this, but he wrote this years ago and I've liked it for years. Or again, Picasso, like whatever he did, and a lot of artists from back in the day did all kinds of weird stuff. It's so far removed from it. But Bill Cosby, I grew up with Bill Cosby, right?
Mm-hmm. And you were part of the deception.
Yeah, and for some reason
now, you bought into the idea that he was your black dad.
And again, that coupled with the light that's being shown on how many sexual assaults. I knew some of the statistics growing up of how many sexual assaults happen, where they happen, how they happen. And still, it didn't come through with as much blazing poignancy as it does now that I see this. I don't know what the word for it is, but this idea that someone comes out and then more and it grows, and the confidence of these women grows.
The Gomeshi effect, man.
Yeah, but this idea that the women are afraid and they put it behind them, hopefully in a positive way, they put it behind them.
Unlikely.
The fact that they're coming out in droves and exponentially when these things get...
It's safety in numbers is what it is.
Yes.
The Gomeshi effect is safety in numbers.
Yeah, but that saddens me so much that those women had had to deal with it that way, that they were so traumatized they didn't they
and
couldn't
that even
find
now
reason.
Even now, whether it's the Cosby thing or now the Trump thing, even now, if they come out and there's tens of millions of people that support them, there's still tens of millions of people that make them into villains.
So yeah, and I'm gonna talk about the bravery it takes. Like, that's again what makes
selflessness,
me so angry. Selflessness, sure, that people would say, oh, you're not telling the truth, or this is a lie because of the timing. How dare you assume that? You could be right, but how dare you assume that and throw that stone when it takes that much courage to come out and say that at that time, to come out and say that at all? People don't want that. If you're a woman who's been assaulted 10, 20, 30 years ago, and you have managed to get through that, you don't want to talk about it again, right? And so, yeah, maybe there's a personal reaction to this based on evolution, our evolution as people, my evolution of understanding how sexual assault works, and coupled with someone who I actually was a fan of personally. That's
well,
the difference.
I
liked Bill Cosby. He seemed likable to me.
Yeah.
And
you were fooled.
And comedians. Comedians is another good example where when you're like you and I, and we're comedians in our own way, we're humorists, we have a tendency to think, like someone like Kevin Smith is a great example. Kevin Smith gets up there and talks and you feel like you know him. If I found out that someone like that, well, let's not talk about Kevin Smith in that way, he's great, but if that's what's happened, is I've found out that someone like Bill Cosby, who I feel
well,
like I know.
Well, I think the sad thing is that a lot of men probably don't understand, and certainly a lot of people who don't have direct experience with sexual assault, is that there, it's not always the case. In fact, it's not often the case that the people that are assaulting others are hiding in the bushes in trench coats. They're the people that are masquerading as lovable individuals. Yeah. And that's the part that's what's most disturbing and creepy of all. In the case of Trump, I don't know whether any of those women were genuinely assaulted by him. I tend to think that they probably were based on his character and how he conducts himself.
The fact
that
I wasn't surprised to hear it.
But regardless of whether it's the case that they did or they didn't, the fact that he comes out now to these rallies and he talks about how he must not have done it because look at them, they're not attractive enough.
Oh my God.
It's so fascinating. I promise that it's already hopefully this is already evident to people now, but you can imagine historically when they look back on the story of the first time in 200 plus years that the American Republic allowed a woman, voted for a woman to be president, her opposition was a serial sex offender who shamed the women. We're so lost in this Trump circus, it's hard to keep track of everything that's going on. But I promise you that will be one of the takeaways looking back. That, of course, the first woman that was able to be voted into that office had to just barely squeak through some intense,
underqualified, rich, white ass
woman hater. It's crazy.
Well, and maybe that's what it's for. Maybe that historically is what Trump is for, is to show
That's the only thing you can hope.
And that a woman who's qualified to do the job will beat him because that's what's supposed to happen.
That as disturbing and distressing as it is that common sense and decency is under attack from a large segment of the voting population, so much so that as much as people say it's a given that she'll win the election, it's still within the margin of error. But it's so close that decency prevails, common sense prevails, and the gasoline thrown on that fire of hatred is just for all of their efforts to seize the presidency, they fail, and they just slowly become extinguished.
Yeah, like they just melt like a witch into nothingness, and no one's there to help.
I guess we did manage to talk about Trump. We did find a way to do that after all. You know? I mean, of course, if we're going to start talking about Cosby, how can that not lead into a conversation of Donald Trump?
This is really cool. That's cool to have a revelation on the radio.
That was cool.
Yeah.
That was cool. That was not rehearsed, folks.
Yeah, I really thought I was separate from that, and you mentioned then that you just said Cosby, and
I don't take any credit for managing to guide the conversation there. I just mentioned Bill Cosby, and a light turned on.
Yeah, you saw it, right? Yeah, because I realized, oh my God,
it's a good conversation to have, an important conversation to have, because I think there is something to your position that you offered where people have the right to have their own beliefs and not to be militantly opposed by others. And on the other hand, we've shed some light on why it might be the case that people would be heartbroken to see people who are decent people implicitly support something, if only by not condemning that thing. And I remember when Bill Cosby was playing at a theater in Kitchener in Ontario I remember Judd Apatow was really leading the charge. Like, what are you doing? Why?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that and I thought, this is pathetic. I mean, I've played in those theaters in Ontario, and I'm sure that the people who are make the choice to allow him to perform there are not woman haters. They're not overtly bad people.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is it's a financial choice that they make, and it's a calculated choice that they have more to lose than to gain by canceling the show, so the show must go on. And I think that's spineless, and I hate that. And to me, that was very reminiscent of what's now happening. Now, Keith, the show is wrapping up. You can hear the sound of the fire there. We've had an interesting episode. This is episode 15 of Now We're Talking. We're halfway through series 2, and folks, we do the show every Sunday from 6 to 7. So we hope that you tune in next time, and take care.